Welcome to Inside Legion, the podcast that takes place inside David Holler's mind. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Chapter 25 of Legion, a.k.a. the one with the rap battle.
Oh,
yeah.
Sick.
This episode was amazing.
Amazeballs.
So good. Oh, my God. I can't believe that they are three episodes from the end. And they're like, hey, real quick, we're going to do something set entirely in a different place, mostly with characters who have not showed up this season at all.
The whole season.
But it was so great to see all of them.
Yes, it was.
It was fantastic. It was a perfect, thrilling episode. I got choked up at points. I got excited at points. This show is phenomenal.
So good. And you got Mantzoukas in there.
Oh my God. That was so funny.
I think this is part of the League universe of shows.
Yeah, Jason Mantzoukas, if you don't know, is always playing the same character in everything that he does. Yeah. And this is just another example of him being that dude.
I just know him from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But,
same guy.
Yeah, it's the same guy.
Same character.
Good place.
But the
same character.
Yeah.
Really? I just love how
the UCB theater when we knew him back in the day.
Yep.
Yep.
Same guy.
Same character.
Just the tonally how each episode sometimes has different tones, different feels. I love the show so much because you sit down and you're like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like they take such big swings, make such fun choices with this show. Just the way this started was so different and slow, and you're like in a field and there's a voiceover.
Well, before we get to that, though, let's do recap because there's a lot of stuff you need to know before we actually get into this episode. The main thing you probably need to know about that has been off the board for a while are there two characters, Oliver Bird and Melanie Bird. Melanie Bird, played by Jean Smart, she used to be the leader of the mutant task force that eventually joined together with Division 3. She was long separated from her husband, Oliver Bird, who initially was trapped in the astral plane in a giant ice cube, played by Jermaine Clement. Not the ice cube, played by Jermaine Clement. He played
the ice cube as well.
Oh, did he?
Dual duty.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That's range.
Really good actor.
That's range.
That's dual range, duty. Which Jason Mantzoukas doesn't have. That's what we're saying.
Oh, come on, man.
Don't.
No, he's great. I'm kidding. Oliver Bird eventually broke out, but was taken over by Mal Farouk, the Shadow King, then broke out of that. And finally, when we last left them, they had left together to retreat to the astral plane to live out the last of their days. We've actually speculated on the podcast a little bit about whether they would come back, how they would come back. In fact, they do come back this episode, and we find out what they've been up to. Now, back in the real world, while they escaped, Division 3 has been battling David Holler, a.k.a. Legion, and finally the war came to Division 3. David wrecked everybody. Basically, everybody died the last episode, or he killed them the last episode, and that pretty much includes Sid, his ex-girlfriend, who tried to attack him, tried to switch places with him, but it turned out that there were multiple versions of him in his own mind. He overwhelmed her and sucked her into the back of his mind to be lost forever so that he could break out and, using the time traveler switch, go back in time, make a little change, and according to him, fix the timeline so everything will be good and rosy again. Now, of course, we know it's not going to be because at this point, David is very much the villain of the show, but that's what he
believes. So selfish.
Yeah. He also brought a bunch of his cult members, because he's leading a cult, to go and attack Division 3 with him. That includes Cynthia. Was that her name?
Yeah.
Cynthia. And other folks. And they all died. At the same time, they did a tremendous amount of damage to Carrie. Not Carrie, but Carrie. You know which one I'm talking about, right, Pete?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, which one am I talking about?
Carrie.
Nope, other one.
The other one.
Sorry about that. So she got very damaged. Meanwhile, Carrie, who does machines like Donatello, was hanging back. He had been under the thrall of David for a little while and created a device to amplify David's powers so David could go into a time tunnel where Switch is able to take him and travel back in time, which they did a couple of times. But while they were doing it, they attracted the attention of the Time Eaters, a.k.a. the Time Demons, a.k.a. the Blue Meanies. They eat time, they reverse time, they're absolutely horrifying, and as we found out at the last episode, The time door that Switch opened didn't manage to close, and the time demon seemed to be coming back through out of it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this isn't exactly important to know this episode, but Amala Farouk, the Shadow King, who was working with Division 3, has been trapped in the time between times, so he's off the board. Lenny, played by Aubrey Plaza, stabbed herself in the neck, is turning into a tree, so she's off the board. And Clark, a.k.a. Melty Face, a.k.a. Hamish Linklater, got thrown into space, and he's dead and singing in space.
Yeah.
And then Autonomy went away with the other robot people?
Yeah, they're just in the ship somewhere.
They're just hanging out? The mustache gang is chilling?
Yeah, they're just chilling somewhere else. The other thing you should probably know about Cid is we've seen Cid at various points in her timeline. She's had a horribly traumatic life. She, both as a kid, as a young adult, and as an adult, things have been awful for Cid pretty much across the board. She developed a mutant power which allows her to touch people and switch places with them, and that has brought her nothing but pain over the course of her entire life, even though she eventually managed to own that pain and try to grow from that.
Yeah. Yep.
So there we go. Let's jump into the episode. Justin, you want to walk us through it?
Let's do it. We're on the astral plane, which is a fun like forest where stuff that people forget about goes. We meet Jason Mantzoukas, who's the wolf, and we see that Oliver and Melanie Bird live in a house of straw.
Oh, man.
Which I believe is based on the Three Little Pigs.
Oh, okay, okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, it's a subtle ref.
Which great now, is the kind of running bit of like we got to move type of thing. That was fun.
It was fun.
Now, the whole episode is a riff on fairy tales and stories as they develop, which is something that, if I remember correctly, Oliver Bird was very into back when he was a more regular character on the show.
He was a little meta in general. He was sort of living a little bit outside the story. And
so I took this. I took what was going on as this is his vision of the astral plane. He essentially has created this world that they're living in, right?
Yeah, this feels like an expanded version of the Ice Cube place where he used to live. And it's funny, they have fully like turned their back on all of that stuff from the past and don't quite remember everything that came before. They're just trying to have a fun life where they eat garbage, basically, and live on in a flower box in New York City.
But I like this idea here, the essential idea that the things people forget about, the things that are left behind, get sent directly to the astral plane.
Yeah.
I thought that was a very cool concept that played out very nicely throughout the episode. And that includes the baby that he immediately finds, who we almost immediately find out is young Cid.
Yeah. I know, it's crazy.
Which was hilarious because he was like, yeah, the baby told me his name is Cid. And then his wife was like, the baby can talk? And he's like, no, silly, it's a baby. That was a real fun moment.
It's crazy that all the forgotten things go there because what we didn't see is the concept of us getting a present for Pete's birthday, which should have been there because we definitely forgot about that. But they'll get that next time. Fun. There's a lot of comedy in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of, like, good old sturdy straw. Nothing beats straw.
It's great. I mean, I know he probably didn't, but so much of it was geared towards Jermaine Clement and his delivery on things and what he can do and what he likes to do as an actor that I think this one was written by Noah Hawley. So I'm sure it was leaning into that. But I did wonder how much input he gave into the episode, because a lot of it was like his turn of delivery or the way that he was saying this thing seemed very classically Jermaine Clement to me.
Yeah. Even down to the rap battle, which also felt
a glorious rap battle.
Both sides of it felt like it was very much the actors' personalities coming through in what they were saying. So
absolutely.
I imagine maybe they collaborated a little bit on that.
Yeah, and also a lot of talk about herpes and chlamydia.
Because Jason Mantzoukas is the wolf. He essentially represents reality, but the dark side of reality. So he is calling out to Jermaine Clement, and he's like, oh, have you told the kid about the Holocaust yet?
Yeah.
Which, very funny line. And he's like, well, you know, you got to tell them about it sometime. They got to grow up.
Yeah.
Oh, tell her about chlamydia, which became a running bit throughout the episode to talk about chlamydia. Again, very funny, but to your point, very Jason Mantzoukas.
Yeah, and it was nice because he was tempting them with real-world things, and even beyond that real-world, vices or problems throughout. They capture Cynthia, who's his sort of thrall or girlfriend, felt very much like David Holler and the women he has with him in the cult. And they bring her over into their astral plane. Nice reality. A lot of sitting in fields.
Yeah.
Doing stuff in the
so
cabin.
So the interesting thing to me about the wolf, about Jason Mantzoukas' wolf, is he's not completely wrong, right?
Right.
Like, Jemaine Clement, Oliver and Melanie Bird, they have retreated into a total fantasy world, which isn't exactly right, and they realize by the end that they need to hit halfway, that they need to accept some of the reality. But the wolf also isn't wrong. Him saying you need to own your pain, you need to face that there are bad things in the world, is correct as well, and all of this is about Sid's journey to discovering both of these things, to finding her halfway.
But also, Mr. Bird was right in the fact of, like, you know, you should learn about love first, you know, like raise somebody right, raise them with love, and then try to get them ready for the madness.
I do appreciate you calling him Mr. Bird and being very formal about it and nice instead of Oliver.
That's what Pete.
You don't know him.
That's what Pete calls pigeons, too. Excuse me, Mr. Bird, but
no,
I'm walking over you.
I call them Mr. Flying Rats.
Nice. Yeah, I agree with you. In fact, I would argue that the wolf is an expression that is coming out of the birds. I think that's not an outside force. It's there to hurt them. I think that's where their guilt for abandoning the rest of the mutants and just completely retreating and letting them like figure their shit out.
It was interesting to me that more of that came through with Oliver than it did with Melanie. We've spent so much more time with Melanie over the course of the show. And if I have any quibble about this episode, it's I think she got a little bit of short shrift.
I agree with you from performance side, but I think it actually makes sense for the character because she was much more ready to fully retreat than he was.
Sure.
It felt like he was a little bit like in the fight more so. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, I'm absolutely done with this. I've been hurt too much by this because she's addicted to David's drug in the last season. Yep. And then she like misses Oliver and finally is like, fuck all that. I'm done with it. I've suffered too much.
Right. And he was literally chilling in an ice cube for decades while she was out in the middle of mutant human battles and everything. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's fair. She wanted a break. She gets a break. She's done with all of it.
Even Sid was like, aren't you guys going to come? There's a big war going on. A lot of riding on this. And they were like, nah, we're done.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's jump back to the episode.
So they move into the stick house. Sid gets a little older. Little Sid is dreaming of real Sid's life. Yeah. Now, I thought it was interesting. I guess this plays out a little bit further on, but as Sid grows older, she doesn't turn into Sid. It's like a different actor, which I thought was interesting.
Well, she's living a whole lifetime in there. Yeah, she's growing up, as she talks about later on. These are the different actresses that we've seen previously playing young Sid and teenage Sid.
Right, but at the older Sid, like Oliver has to turn her into the Sid we know.
Oh, at the very end.
At the very end, yeah.
Sure.
So that, to me, sort of informed back that into this section where it's a fully separate life. She could not go back. She could live here forever and be fine. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting. It was a full divergence and maybe plays into what we're going to see in this final two episodes of David trying to divert the timeline to create a happier life and hide all of his sins.
Maybe. I know last episode I predicted that we'd almost immediately see a separate timeline. I'm not sure anymore. I don't know. Very typical of the show, but I don't know what is going to happen at this point. Yeah. Whether we are going to see diverting timelines, whether we're going to see him jump through the different timelines from episode 7 from last season or something like that. Anything is possible at this point.
I feel like there's going to be a battle throughout time. I don't know if we'll fully get to see a divergent timeline. I guess at this point it sort of doesn't make sense to unless they somehow jump back before the divergent time, the timeline diverges, right?
This is definitely jumping ahead to the next episode, but it all depends on where David went back to, I think, which we still do not know.
In this episode, we get a lot of flashback. We see Sid and David and the big dude with the yellow eyes and a lot of stuff from their relationship and all the horrible things that David did to her.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool. So they move into a house of bricks, which unfortunately is in the gutter. We see Sid encounter the beating heart in the streets, Cynthia, who has been taken back by the wolf, and her very mean children.
Well, they're not mean. They're just drunks.
Yeah, that's true. But they're sort of creepy.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, if you're 10 and you're drinking vodka that hard, you're going to be creepy, man. Yeah.
One little detail just to jump back that I wanted to talk about with Melanie, just because I like this scene a lot, is there's a scene of Melanie describing how babies are made young Sid.
Yeah.
This was just a very honestly written scene and honestly described scene between the characters, both in terms of talking about, like, this is a beautiful thing that a woman's body can do from Melanie's perspective and from young Sid's perspective. She's like, that's gross.
Well, and that's when she also describes chlamydia there, right?
And that's like, what if that was a great cold way to do it. You sneeze.
But from your vagina.
Yeah, you sneeze from your vagina. Yeah.
I love that they just went.
Any ladies who listen to this podcast, write us in. Let us know if that's accurate.
Wow. What an unnecessary thing to say.
Yep.
I liked how direct they went to that.
I don't have a vagina.
That's
thanks for pointing
accurate
that out. Yeah,
no problem. I know.
We could have just guessed that.
Oh, okay.
No, we should investigate.
No. What were you going to say?
I was going to say I loved it. It felt like they were going to do like the parent thing of them lying to her, but instead she gave like a clinical breakdown of what it is, which I thought was very funny. So they want to get Cynthia back, who has been taken by Jerome. So they bribe the kids.
Which is Sid's idea. They were kind of cool with it. They woke up the next day and were like, oh, well, she's gone. Oh, well.
Well, we should talk also about Cynthia's kids, because they're so weird and interesting at the same time.
Yeah.
When they show up on the street next to the beating heart, there's a little girl who's super into vodka and talks about how there's different flavors of vodka. You must have appreciated that, Pete.
Oh, yeah.
Pete loves that.
I mean, we think about it, they flavor vodka. Who is that for? You know what I mean? That's for 10-year-olds.
Yeah, that's true. And you.
And the other dude is a teenage boy, very into video games, very into violence and things like that.
Yeah.
Classic dude.
It was interesting to me that they decide to rescue Cynthia, but they don't decide to rescue these two other children. Who are these children, do you think?
She said, these are my kids. Cynthia had two children with the wolf.
Did she, though?
What do they represent,
is my question.
I think they're like
the temptations of the world.
Vices, of the world that draw people in. They felt like sort of like Victorian ragamuffins in a lot of ways.
Yeah, as a classically trained actor, I'm sure you played both those kids
before. Indeed, I've played both those children to some fanfare.
Well, I think you could also draw a line here in this episode about stories growing up and how stories grow up, that you start with very simple fairy tales with the Three Little Pigs. Then it goes to Charles Dickens. Like, it's clearly a Dickensian city that's going on there. Two, you end up back in the X-Men universe with time travel and everything else. So it's not necessarily overt throughout the episode, but you could say Noah Hawley is commenting on the development of stories as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's cool. That's
also, there was a real fun moment where, you know, he was asking her about music. She was like, I'm five. And he's like, that's no excuse. You know, I love that. That was really
throughout,
nice.
Yeah. Great lines for Jermaine Clement. Oh, yeah. So back to the point where they're trying to rescue Cynthia. They come up with a plan. They roll out some vodka. They get the kids drunk. Mm-hmm. And then they stick a bag over Cynthia's head.
Classic kidnapping.
Classic kidnapping. Unfortunately, the wolf finds out about it almost immediately and goes after Oliver, Mr. Bird, if you will.
Yep.
And Oliver says, nope, I know how to deal with this. Goes back to his classic white suit that he was wearing in the Ice Cube.
So great to see that again.
Yeah. Great to see that again. That's him owning his power, owning his abilities, because he has almost complete control over the astral plane. And then he gets to this point that we've teased a couple of times before. They get straight into a rap battle.
There's only one way this can end.
Yeah.
A rap battle.
Yeah, it was amazing. So good.
This whole sequence was shot so well. It was super funny. All the lyrics told the story.
Just amazing.
Just great.
My favorite verse, if you will, I think it was Sweeter Than Toilet Wine.
Yeah.
It was just glorious.
Because you're a big believer in toilet wine.
A lot of cursing in this rap. Yeah. I mean, I know FX can get away with that, but
wow. Alex, real worried about cursing in rap.
I don't know. There was a whole thing about like slapping him with his cock and stuff.
Yeah.
It was a little much.
It was fine ass toilet wine, which is great because
this is a family show. That's all I'm saying.
No, it's not.
No, it's definitely not, Alex. Do not watch this with your family anymore.
Yeah, Jesus.
No.
Your kids are going to be drinking vodka, flavored vodka.
Yeah. Well, we did. I play a drinking game with my kids. Every time they mention a drink of the show, they drink.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Smart.
That's
juice. They drink juice.
On Just Legion or all television?
All television. They have to
drink. Don't watch anything with vampires.
Oh, jeez.
these kids will be drinking blood.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
The rap battle was such a fun way to play this out. And to your point about it being sort of the evolution of stories, I thought you could take that a step further in the combination of, like, tragedy and comedy. This mm-hmm. episode seemed to sort of toggle back and forth between both, where some of the comedic moments played for tragedy, some of the tragic moments played for comedy. I think
Plus
that's very
cool. Storytelling and rap. I mean, come on. This is all great stuff.
100%. Yeah. Unfortunately, Cynthia stops and decides to go with the wolf, with Jerome the wolf.
Again.
Yeah. What do you think that was all about?
I think she has decided to live in the real world, but the negative parts of the real world. I mean, she was already joining David's cult. She was trying to escape from things, clearly, to be there and live in this fantasy land that he had created. So going with the wolf, that's probably her way of saying, no, I give that up. This is what I want. I'm going to be a junkie on the streets, but that's who I am.
Sort of to take it back into the metaphor, though, maybe you can't go back to those simpler stories once you've seen harder stories or more complex stories. Or also, once your time in a story has passed, you can't go back to it.
And it might also be because, unlike Sid, she's dead, right?
Yes.
I think. I mean, I don't remember where she was in the previous episode. There were all those groupies that David sent somewhere else last episode. And when Lenny confronted him, he's like, I don't know, just somewhere else. They're somewhere else. I don't know. Don't worry about it. So Cynthia might be in one of those. But there's also that very telling shot of the wolf as they very slowly pan into the alleyway where the wolf is in front of a wall of fire.
Yeah.
So there's also a sense of he's the devil. He is in hell. So she might be already dead, already in hell, and she has accepted her fate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cynthia. Tough.
Classic tough TV break. Character Cynthia.
Yeah.
Yep.
Classic trope. Sid
realizes, like, I've got to fight.
She's like, I'm Sid. Oliver, Melanie takes on her old persona. Sid, they reveal Sid to be Sid. And they're like, come on, let's go. We already talked about this.
It was
and
such a like, great moment when the two of them are standing next to each other.
Yeah.
What I loved about the way that was shot as well is how far away they were from each other.
Yeah.
That there wasn't a teary-eyed goodbye. There was no hug or anything. They were already separated. The birds are already on the other side of the street. They're still in the astral plane. They're not leaving. But Sid is frozen in place. She is where she is. And when she comes back, when she eventually pulls herself back to the real world, the main thing she does is she changes her hair. But she comes to Carrie and Carrie, and they see that something's different in her. Yeah. Because
Carrie immediately knew.
Yeah, she's lived an entire life. Now, do you think, based on what we were talking about from the recap, and based on that Sid has been through so much pain, do you think essentially she has been reborn without that pain?
Yes.
That she is just the hero she was meant to be now?
I think she sort of owned it, sort of hardened that pain into the armor she needs to finally take on David.
Yeah, yeah. And
a Sid in the hand is worth two birds in the astral plane.
Put it on a T-shirt.
But I also loved her line of like, she's like, yeah, something's changed. I just lived a whole life in 20 minutes.
Remind me of the Next Generation episode with the flute. Captain Picard.
Oh, a classic flute episode.
Where he goes, he finds the flute, he lives a whole life, and then he comes back.
Yeah.
That's held up as the best Star Trek The Next Generation episode.
Wow, that's bold.
Nobody here?
Nobody.
No, I don't remember it.
What?
Sorry.
It's the number one episode.
Is it?
The flute app.
Yeah.
Everybody's talking
about it. You keep talking about it like you know what I'm talking about, but I don't think you do.
I don't know.
The last episode is the best episode.
No, definitely not.
Nah, I don't know.
No real fan.
Dude, people talk about the
flute. I'm not a real fan then.
Clearly, I know you're not.
I guess not.
You've if you don't even remember the flute episode, then you don't know what the flute
is. I'll tell you what.
You're not well.
Oh,
it's a recorder.
Well. Who's the true fan?
You know,
now?
I was thinking of a flute like from Zelda.
Sure.
From Legend of Zelda. That's
an ocarina.
No, and the originals.
Oh, the originals out there.
Ocarina was made up later.
Yes. Anyways.
By the way, this is a great time to plug our Woodwinds podcast. Oh, my God. Who Woodwind what? In a fight?
Oh, my God.
Check it out on iTunes and Android, and that's it.
So
Sid gets back, but before she gets back, Carrie and Carrie, I'm not going to clarify which one is which, but one of them is all banged up. The other one feels bad about it, trying to heal her. Her eye is completely torn to shreds. She is in awful shape, barely holding herself up when Sid comes in. And Sid tells them, I know how to stop David.
Yep.
She finds that the time door is still open. It's vibrating. It's rotating. Very cool effect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she asks Carrie to create more of the devices that amplified David's powers that let him go into the time door. We get a little montage sequence of that. And as he's finishing that up, Carrie is like, listen, I have some bad news for you. Do you want to hear it? And she's like, no. And he's like, okay, here it is. And he tells her the time eaters are probably back. And she's like, I told you I did not want to hear the bad news.
Yeah.
But then we get so many emotional things at the same time.
Yeah.
Because not only do they start bringing up the music and the title sequence at this point, which amps me up beyond belief this point in the show. But then we get this moment where Carrie and Carrie, who have been separate for seasons, we didn't mention this in the recap, but Carrie and Carrie live in the same body. They are brother and sister, but they can go inside of each other's bodies and live there. And that is why Carrie is older than Carrie. And they haven't done that for seasons. They decided to separate. They decided to be separate people and see what that was like. And when they're about to go into the time door, Carrie says, listen, they realize what they need to do is they need to do it again, because then Carrie can give her pain to Carrie. And as she says to him, you can do what you do from a chair.
Yep. Yeah.
So they get a wheelchair. She goes inside of him. We see all of her pain go on him. He falls down. She comes out fully healed and ready to do battle.
Yes, she does.
Oh, my God. Incredibly fantastic sequence.
She's got a whole new outfit
on. She does, like,
the
badass walk and then stops to fucking kick a time demon. Great.
Yeah, well, that too.
Glorious.
So that moment, which was so pent up and so well played out, because personally, I've become so invested in Carrie and Carrie's story to see it come to fruition that way. They waited long enough. Like, they took enough time, and that was great. And then the time eaters come. They're running for the time door. Sid gets through. They push Carrie through. And then Carrie is left there. And I swear to God, I thought Carrie was going to die.
Me too. Oh, that would have been crazy. We went through all that transference of the pain thing. And then she just gets wiped out right there.
But I thought her job was to hold off the time eaters while the door closed.
Yeah.
But instead, as Pete said, she does a sweet kick and goes through the door herself. And like then the time door closes. Amazing.
So good. Now, do you think, so the transference of pain moment, in an episode about dealing with the pain of the real world and dealing with the pain in your personal life, that transference of pain moment, I feel like, was a perfect comment or cap on it, where it was like, you have to feel the pain. We get to see Carrie feel the pain that Carrie went through. And that's the thing that made them ready to face this upcoming challenge. So I think that was sort of the micro version of what Sid went through in the astral plane.
Yeah,
that
because was very cool. She gave her pain to the birds and transformed them back to their old state, where they were a little more human, a little less fairy tale. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right about this.
I love this, because they're like really geared up to go fight David, and it's going to be really cool to see what happens.
Yeah, I love the fact that they don't know what to do. They don't know what's going to happen, but they're still confident that they can win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. There's two episodes left.
I'm pumped, man.
Oh, my God. This show is amazing. The place that they have it is amazing. There's so many balls in the air going into these final two episodes. Yeah. And I fully expect that whatever happens the next episode is going to be a complete swerve.
Yeah. Also, like, it's just so great how they really think about everything. Everything is so well done in the show. Even the goddamn title cards are so creative and so fun.
Yeah. It's this title card was all that junk from Astroplane World. Yeah, very cool. Very cool. I can't wait to see how this goes. Yeah.
So, before we wrap it up, this episode only, this is maybe a little bit of an easier one, but what was real, what's not real?
I think the flower box where the astroplane was, that was not real.
The flower box?
The, like, box that the whole astroplane was existing in.
Oh, okay. Flower box? It was a flower
box?
It was,
like, it was a flower box on the edge of a fire escape in New York City.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't think the astroplane, I mean, it's real, but, like, nothing in there is real. Pete, do you have an answer?
I'm going to say that the rap battle was real.
It was real.
Yeah.
That shit was real.
Yeah.
They laid down some sick beats.
Yeah.
One of my favorite shots of there is they have one wide shot where Cynthia is up at the DJ booth. Yeah. And she's just like,
That was fun.
So fun.
All the close-up camera work on the different guys rapping. It was just so good.
fantastic. If you would like to support the show, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by. We'll chat with you about Legion. Pete, what do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at comicbooklive.
And at Inside Legion for Legion-specific content. Also, you can subscribe on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. And we'll see you inside Legion.
Guys, what if we're still inside Legion when this show ends?
Oh no, we'll be trapped
forever.
Forever.